to Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
Evening, my fellow quarantinees.
What's up, everybody?
I hope everybody is staying safe. I won't bog down our hobby distractions with everything out there, but I hope you all have toilet paper and are feeling good.
It's a wild ride at the moment, life. But hey, we're still here. Can't be that bad.
Well, again, you know, I think everyone is pumping the brakes, and maybe we need that sometimes. But, you know, I will say that I have been spending a lot more time around the house, and I've had a couple of hobby crises today. You guys can probably relate.
Say it ain't so, Paul.
Which one you want to hear first? The good news? Well, I guess I'll tell you. They've both been resolved, but let me tell you. The heart pounding. I've started working on a new project. I've started painting some Necromunda figures. And I was trying some color schemes outside of my comfort zone. I'm actually painting Goliath, which I may have mentioned before. But I decided to do a pink and brass color scheme. So their armor is pink. You know, I thought it might look cool. I did some hazard striping on their bases. I thought it might, you know, give that good contrast. It actually turned out okay. So then I wrote the recipe down in my journal, my paint journal, of how I painted the pink and the pants and whatever. You can actually see some pictures on my other things there at warmaster_TPM on Twitter and at Fights with Dice on Instagram. So this, I finished the leader a couple of days ago on my test model, really happy with how it turned out. I went to go paint some other gang members in the army. I don't even know what I'm supposed to call them. The gang? The list?
Yeah, your gang.
So I went to go paint a couple extra guys, and I had lost my notebook. So,
it really is like the our equivalent of a cookbook or a dream diary.
Yeah. So all the recipes of all the paint, I lost, and I'm freaking out. Like, okay, It has to be around here somewhere. But during my kind of busy work, I've been shuffling some things around, and I was convinced for about 3 minutes that I would never find it again.
3 minutes, three long, arduous, torturing minutes.
They were excruciating. I found it. I found the notebook.
Good, good.
But it took me a while to find it. By the time I'd found it, I'd used up all the time that I had to paint. But now I have a greater appreciation for the journal.
Sure. Yeah. No, one of those things you don't realize just how valuable that much information can be until it's suddenly gone, possibly.
I mean, it couldn't have gotten far, right? I mean,
right. Or at least that's what you tell yourself.
Yeah. Well, but I told you, I looked, you know, everywhere I thought I'd been, you know, you're retracing your steps, you know, doing everything, trying to, but it just wasn't where I was thinking it was going to be. Turns out, I didn't even want to tell you where it was.
You ashamed? Was it next to the toilet? Don't be ashamed. It was next to the toilet. That's where it should be.
That's the Omega Vault.
Yeah.
It was under the box of Goliath figures.
That's a shame.
But look, everybody's a little distracted, a little distressed now, but, you know, needed that to get the blood pumping.
That's right. I mean, I've had a little bit of a crisis of hobby mojo. Like, don't quite know where my hobby mojo's at, or I've got no events to look forward to. I don't really... Yeah, that could be a topic if we wanted to. How to keep your hobby mojo going through uncertain times. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you that it's an excellent point. And in this regard, I would highly stress getting a routine and staying in a routine and not allowing yourself to fall out of it. And to a point, you can pace yourself that way, right? So like you can kind of test the waters with how much energy you really have for it. Don't allow yourself to just burn yourself out on it.
Yeah.
Maintain that routine and make sure you've got the right avenues to kind of burn your stress in the right ways one way or the other, whether that's like a, you know, in your routine you've got like a quick workout or something like that versus, you know, time to sit down and get some hobbying done. You know, you talk about whether it's 10 Goliath models or, you know, 60 guard models or something, you just got to make sure you pace yourself accordingly.
We talked a little bit about this in the past in a finishing move segment, is that how motivation is something, it's like lightning in a bottle. It's like magic. When you have it, then do it. But you're not going to get an army painted just because you're motivated. You have to have this routine like you're talking about, Rhett.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no real sprints when it comes to doing an army for a while. Whether it comes to getting an army done for your hobby, especially when you don't have an event to work towards. I mean, I know I have like crammed out some pretty the average level look and stuff in recent months for going and for trying to practice for things like ETC and top level team events and things like this. When I'm just by myself, I like to paint to my best ability. I don't know if anybody else can relate to that. When I paint something, I like to paint the best things I can. I like every next thing I paint or next army or project to be better than the one I just did. That can at times be pretty exhausting, especially in these uncertain times. So I like the idea of pacing yourself, of picking a goal. Let's say that be something like, oh, this week, I could get all this stuff done. I could get all these amazing, you know, I could get 4 rhinos done this week. But why do I need to get 4 done when I've got nothing to work for? How about I just get 2 done this week and not stress?
Yes, spend right. those 5-10 minutes extra, like we promote of making something look a little bit better, get those lenses looking a little bit sharper, do a little bit of weathering on the tracks, maybe, you know.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Or if you're lacking for a project, like maybe you're not going out and getting any new models, but you're working on the ones you got. I'm willing to bet you could go back to some of your later paint jobs and spruce them up a little bit.
Yep.
eBay salvage jobs is a big premise of the show.
Well, that is one of my, I guess one of the things that I do when I'm cramming something to just get it done for an event. Like I painted, literally painted 6 Dark Angels flyers for a tournament. I probably will not use them, those same flyers, for a long time. But at the same time, when I painted them up to a standard at which I could leave them for later. Like I painted them to, not to the best of my ability, I painted them to a half decent 3-color tabletop. And then they're there and they're available when I want to try and make them better in a month's time. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm actually just going to go back to all this stuff that I've neglected and or half finished and just start bringing it all up to the standard I'm happy with. And that's just the idea of that brings me a lot of calm. Like, I don't know, can't speak for anybody else, but when I've got a lot of unfinished models and I move past them to other ones, I don't get anxious, but I just get unhappy. Like, I'm like, ugh, feels bad opening up the hobby drawer because I've got this chest of drawers and each layer is a different army in it. Like, my top two is just 10,000 points of painted Cadians. And then the next drawer is my Dark Angels. And some of them are magnificent. And from left to right, it goes from beautifully painted to very mediocre on the right. I'm like, ugh. Let's bring the whole drawer up to standard, you know?
Okay. You got any models that you're really anxious about getting back to?
So I have, the flyers mostly is what I'm anxious about. But actually the ones I'm really keen on is my Talonmasters are in Sammy conversions. I've got 2 Talonmasters in Sammy that I converted out of Custode Bikers. And then a bunch of Ravenwing upgrade kits and the Black Knight kit. So 3 different kits into these guys. So they're pretty expensive for what they are, even though, you know, it's Australian dollars, so everything's already expensive. Yeah, so they're the ones I'm really anxious to do and do them justice. Like they're some of my most favorite models I've ever built and ever converted. So getting them done to a really good standard is, going to be really nice. I'm going to feel a lot better about my life as well afterwards.
Someone actually asked to talk more about Dark Angels. So it is desperate times out there.
Oof, is it ever. But I know some, if I start talking about Blood Angels, the same thing's gonna happen as always, mate. You're gonna segue smoothly into Blood Angels like within 20 minutes of any talk of anything with angels in
anything
it.
Angel it's in just, the title. Oh, did you say?
Yeah. What? Sanguineous?
Let me mention my other hobby tragedy. I have some Eliminator heads. Because the way they come right now, or at least in the starter sets, is they're intermingled with the suppressors. And so I built the suppressors and left the Eliminator heads on the sprue because they're right there. And then I cleaned them up. I moved them somewhere. And then I discovered that I had left one head still in the, you know, where it was. And then went to go put it with the other ones and I couldn't find them again.
Wow.
I'm not doing a very good job over here.
The wheels have come off.
I've since found them. They were not with the journal. They were in a different place. You put them like, certainly I'm going to know. I'm going to know exactly where these are when I come back to them.
Surely.
Yeah. It didn't work. But I found them and I put them with the other Space Marine things, which I should have done in the first place. But I've got a new system now.
So my system at the moment is to try and do hobby for about 2 hours a day and then just leave it at that. If on the weekends, I can kind of go as long as I go, but on my work days, like on the weekdays, I'm trying not to chew off too much.
2 hours a day is strong.
Yeah, I like it. It's just enough to wet the whistle, but not so much that my eyes or brain hurt afterwards. Because, you know, we're all getting old here.
That is the truth. Man, so those are it. Those are my a couple of moments of shame. That happened today, by the way. That was like earlier today. 6 minutes of terror.
Interested to know what you're working on, Red.
I'm kind of in between, you know, the circumstances we find ourselves in, being at home a little more often. I am, yeah, I the reality is I sit here and I talk about how important it is to have a routine. And I say that in light of me struggling to maintain my own routine and really just establish it to begin with, right? I mean, so fortunately, at least in my own lifestyle, you know, my family, they've got a routine that they're used to at home. Now I'm the interloper, right? Like, cause I'm home from work and whatnot. And so trying to get in that routine. But for myself, I've got some other miniatures and things like that outside of 40K that I've had that have been staring me down for a little bit. And they're a real passion of mine. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kingdom Death.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And so I've got some of those that I've been putting together and getting painted. In the meantime, I've also made I've been making some conversions for a good friend of mine. He saw one of my models that I had for my Khorne army at LVO, and he asked me to make him something similar. So I've been doing that, and that's been a good little distraction. But here's the big thing, really. Not that that isn't, you know, I love being able to help my friend in that regard, but I have made the decision that, so I don't know if you're familiar with Gaunt's Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm a huge collector. I mean, I've every time a limited edition, anything Gaunt's Ghost has come out, I have picked it up. In fact, my background, I have the flag, the Tanith flag, in my little basement dungeon that I live stream out of. Anyways, so I thought about doing a Blood Pact army, like a Traitor Guard kind of deal.
So many good miniatures out right now for that kind of stuff between Blackstone
there
Fortress,
are.
You know, Forge World, and the Chaos Cultists, you know, the shooty versions.
Yep. No, and so I actually collected, I have 8 sets of the Blackstone Fortress Traitor Guard that I've collected over time. And so I was starting to get all those together and ready. And then talking to my, you know, Paul, you've met my younger brother, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
And so we decided I'm actually going to do the Tanith first and only. So I'm going to do Gaunt's Ghost, and he is going to do the Blood
Pact.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
So that's my big announcement for my hobby direction. I'm now going to be playing some Imperial Guard specifically. I mean, so I've already mapped it out. I did a whole character roster. I went through the books, went through, you know, some online sources to help me make sure I had the whole roster down. And I'm going to do some legacy units, some of the things from the earlier books and whatnot. But I'm going to try and create the Tanith first and only as it is in the most recent books with the mix of the Vergastite, Hivers, the Tanith, first and only originals, and then also the Belladonna regiment. And so I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. And so when you talk about the routine and the plan and everything, right now I'm in the kind of the mapping phase. Like I have a ton of guard. It's just and like you're saying, eBay recovery projects, Paul, I a lot of these I've recovered from, you know, people selling them off or whatever. And I've just been slowly building kind of a stockpile of guard that I am now about to finally push in a very definitive direction.
Talking about building your routine and establishing that, and then actually talking about it is great, because what you're doing is you're creating these strings of accountability for yourself. So when you are feeling that lack of motivation, you'll be like, dang, I told somebody, I got to, you know, I sent them work in progress pics yesterday. I should send them an update. And so what do? You got to go paint a little bit more. You got to build a little bit more.
Yep.
Accountability buddies.
Yep. Dude, it's so helpful. I mean, I know we mentioned it in the past, but it is I think even especially now, where we're going to be, you know, having to send pics to each other, maybe because we're not at the game store as often.
Yeah.
Like get a couple of people that are, I mean, like you mentioned your brother or whoever, but it could be anybody. It could be anywhere around the world that is like, yo, let's keep each other honest and working.
That's right.
Exactly right. How old is the Gaunt's Ghost, yeah? How old is that?
Let's see. The first.
It's got to be 20-something years.
It's got to be 20 years old, hasn't it? I was about to say.
I'm checking.
So are you going to.
1999.
Jeez, there you go. So it is. It's 21 years old.
It sure is. And I've been reading them since they came out, man. I mean, it has been quite a ride from back when they first came out to now and where it's all at and everything. It is. I love that story. I love Gaunt. I mean, it's. I've always been a big fan.
What's the crusade they're part of?
The Sabbat Crusade.
Sabbat, yeah, that's right.
And so they've got their own saint and everything, Saint Sabbat. So I'm even going to do that. I'm going to have a saint model that's going to be her and everything from the book. It's going to be fun.
Every time you think you know how deep this hobby is and the storylines and all that stuff, you find like there's this new facet. Like you talk about the Horus Heresy having, you know, 30, 40, 50 books, whatever is in it. And then you're like, oh, but then there's Gorn's Ghost that's been around forever as well. And then there's blah, 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 it's been around forever as well. And yeah, it's fantastic. Just
I think they were the first stuff. Like real, real meaty. And I say that past just, you know, like sci-fi shorts or whatever of the books. And that got that and was it Eisenhorn? Got people that weren't into 40K into reading those books.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Right. They actually play a really pivotal role because they're a standalone story that fits seamlessly into the rest of the fluff, but you don't need to have any knowledge of 40K or be playing the game or anything to enjoy it. And I think that's a huge strength.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear all the time about how, I mean, heck, I mean, new people that, I mean, they knew that I played 40K, so they would just mention like, hey, I'm reading the Warhammer thing, you know, like, oh, what's that? And then they tell me it was always one of those.
Yeah. For me, like I've got I got three brothers and I keep telling them, hey, if you want to learn about the lore, but you don't want to play the game, just read Horus Heresy. Like you learn everything you need to know and you just enjoy it as if it's just any other, if it's like the Wheel of Time series, you get to sink your teeth into it, get to revel in it, you get to follow your favorite characters because the story is just so monstrously deep. But I just finished, I'll talk about this for a sec. I just finished the book Scars and I've been, I got the special edition Lion novel and I was 2/3 of the way through Scars and I'm like, no, you have to finish Scars first. Not allowed.
Did you not like want to finish Scars though? Because I thought that was an amazing book.
It is freaking amazing. That is such a good novel. And I wonder if I had read that, like if that was one of the first Horus Heresy novels I read, would I be playing White Scars right now? It is that good.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, Mortarion comes off as a total badass as well. Like,
No spoilers.
No, well, but to be fair, no spoilers, but the Scars books, like in general, the white, you know, Scars, Path of Heaven, those books in general, and some of the, even the short stories, when you throw them all together, I regret that they came out, I guess, as late as they did in the Horus Heresy, just because, and they did such a good job at delivering, and maybe that's part of it, because they came out so much later, you know, you didn't really hear a lot, because they're not really mentioned earlier. You don't really see a lot about them. And then when they come in, they did such a good job, I think, of almost catching us, the readers or the audience, off guard with just how much depth there was to the White Scars and the Kron and everything, man. It was just so good and they played it out so well. And when you get a chance, if you haven't already, Path of Heaven is an amazing book. And that's when you talk about the depth of the Horus Heresy, man, like literature being a real passion of mine and the depth of literature and story and lore and everything. And man, gosh, like, the White Scars went from not being mentioned to becoming an essential piece of the overall arc.
To everyone wanting a White Scars army, you're exactly right.
Yeah, exactly right.
I was looking in like, oh, I could paint that white scheme. You know, you just shade it with brown. I could do those red, you know, arrows or wherever points. Heck yeah.
I'm just in awe, actually, of the monumental task the GW writers and the authors have done, making each Legion feel somewhat unique and special and... like giving personality to the Primarchs. I might say, so I'm about 60 pages into the Lion book. I'm a little bit disappointed at the lack of Lion in the Lion book, but I'm only like 3 chapters in, so I'm not going to like stress too much.
But have you read Unremembered Empire?
I absolutely have. Holy God.
Do you want to jump in? I just like, if you wanted some Lion action, you know, that's...
He's so good in that. And he's so good because he's a... He's just... he doesn't give... that's why I love him. He's like the one guy who just will do whatever he has to do to get whatever he needs done. Doesn't matter what it is. Oh, I got a job to do. Well, guess I'm doing it. Do you know who he reminds me of? And I always think of Bruce Willis in like Die Hard. Do you know, he's kind of just, you know, in the first Die Hard, like the cops and the police won't give him any help. He's like, well, I got this. Doesn't matter. Just going to kill like 40 dudes by myself and like ace this whole thing.
That's interesting. I would not have done. I'm also not, I mean, as you know, I'm not like a super Dark Angels fan or whatever, but you know, I love the style and the art and the idea of the Primarch, especially after reading Unremembered Empire. I got just so much more respect for that character after that book.
Yeah, same here. It was those books more than anything else that got me into them. Before I read Unremembered Empire, I was playing Black Templars, and then I read those series of books. And then I read Angels of the Caliban and all that other stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. Guess I'm playing Dark Angels now. Oh, look, I'm playing Heresy Dairy Dark Angels. Oh, I'm playing 40K. And I'm playing as if the lion's alive and made them all wear the Heresy Dairy color scheme again.
But I fell in love with it. Here we're talking about some stuff that just keeps you engaged. And I mean, you could start an army for a worse reason.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and I did think you have to be a trad. I mean, like, this is... You spend so much more time romanticizing about your figures than you actually do playing, and so you need this in most cases. I mean, look, I get it. We are filthy meta chasers, except for you, Red. You're exempt from this. But the rest of us, you know, filthy meta chasers, and so sometimes we play things that we have to, but that is still driven by something, right? It's driven by our desire to podium at tournaments or whatever. But
I just think there should be a clause attached to, I don't know, if you were to have like an account, here's my 40K account, and you know, what's your description of your player? You have an asterisk saying that, in love with the fluff, asterisk will play what needs to do well at competitive events.
Yes, that's why we talk about it. So hopefully that some folks understand that.
I don't know if I've said it before yet already, but it probably won't be the first time. But no, you know what? I did when we were talking about Abaddon and Black Legion. Again, it's a very simple choice. It's one of two things. Do you want to have a good time, or do you want to have a good time and win? I mean, that's really, there's two ways to look at it.
Yep. Indeed, man. Well, I mean, I am enjoying this a little bit of extra time, you know. This one good thing about not having to commute is that it gives you back an hour a day or so, sometimes more for folks, and trying to, you know, do some things with the hobby. And then there's, I mean, we joke about it, but we all have, you know, a pile of shame that if anyone doesn't know what that is, it's a stack of either unpainted models or even unput together models in some cases.
I have I've probably got about 2,000 point Custodes army sitting in the bottom drawer of my drawer of armies, and they are in various stages of unbuilt and base coated. So that pile of shame knows no bounds.
But they're going to look awesome.
One day. Eventually.
I had to paint 20 something Sanguinary Guard recently.
And it was the best 3 days of your life, Paul.
I shouldn't say I had to paint. I got to experience painting.
I was privileged enough.
Yeah.
Both of my children did not even come into it.
Yeah. I broke down and I bought a can of Retributor Armor Spray.
There you go.
And that's a hobby gut check, by the way. I don't even mind saying it because that's a $30 spray can.
That's the most expensive can of spray they've ever done, isn't it?
It's the most expensive can of spray in the world.
It's because it's gold.
That's fair.
I don't know that to be true, but it feels like it.
It feels right.
But it did actually save me some time. I hate spreading metallics. Retributor Armor is probably the best one. Like, I don't mind painting with Retributor Armor right out of the pot, but I thought, man, this is like a magnitude well above, you know, where I think my enjoyment will stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
My tolerance of working with this metallic will run out at a pretty rapid pace. And Retributor Armor Spray, just as good as the pot.
That's pretty good, because I've actually had some, I had some weird experiences with, was it Korax White? What was the white spray they came out with?
Yeah, White, yep.
Yeah, I had some weird experiences with that. It would go between being sometimes glossy, sometimes powdery, like, and never in the same can. Like, and I even was doing tricks like, people would say, oh, just heat it up a little bit before you spray. I did that, came out more powdery. Shake it forever before you paint, and then it would come out more glossy. So I don't know. But now I bought a can. The last can I bought of that was about 9 months ago, and that one was absolutely fine. So I don't know. Maybe they were just ironing out a few things.
I bet they come from different factories.
That's true as well. And also, like, Australian climate, sometimes when it's too warm, it's not actually, you just actually just shouldn't spray. You're just going to get a crap finish.
Paul knows about that in Georgia all the time.
We've had every season this week.
Have you had snow though?
We didn't get snow, but it got cold. So you know, it's jumping all around here. It's not good.
Well,
it's been raining for 3 months too. That's also not good. Yeah, sorry, not to complain about the weather, but it's I wish you'd just pick something and stick with it. But yeah, I'm not necessarily endorsing the colored primers, because they take a little bit of finesse to use, because you can easily and quickly gunk up the details on your model. And this is with any of the color primers across any of the factory or any of the manufacturers. And then some of them aren't even intended to be used as primers. They're just a quick way to apply the color.
Yeah, absolutely right. So my favorite actually at the moment is Mechanica Standard Grey Spray from GW, just because you can use it. I feel like it's the multi-purpose one. You can use it for literally no matter what color you're doing over it. Mechanica Standard Grey is the great base for it. But you're right, it does come out thick. Sometimes it comes out thicker than I want. It's never come out too thick that it's unrepairable or I can't work with it. But sometimes it does come out thicker than I want. I wonder why that is. I wonder if there's some paint expert out there. You can tell me why the colored ones, the different pigments make the density of the paint different. I mean, I know things like yellows and oranges are notoriously thin. And I can tell you, being a young man, a 12, 13-year-old trying to paint orange onto a metal Terminator was not a good time. That was definitely a low point in my life right there. But, since then, things have changed. What has changed? I mean, the technology has changed. Is it the binding agents in the paint? Is it the whatever base they're using for it? Yeah, I'd be interested to know what's changed.
It's your fat fingers.
Probably is.
I'm actually joking. I mean, it was a little facetious, and I apologize. It's how far away the distance from your model. I mean, there's an art and a science to this stuff that the casual person, may not really appreciate or at least always be keen to when they're spraying. And that's why I'm always kind of hesitant to suggest these. I just wanted, you had mentioned Custodes, and I brought us quickly back to Blood Angels, see?
You totally did. You did. Oh my God. that's awesome.
Actually, but I had the privilege of painting a little Sanguinary Guard, and I think they can be a time saver, but you've got to kind of know, going back to your routine, you were talking about what it takes to get you through a project. You've got to know what you need to get to that next step because I get more enjoyment out of painting the details on these guys than I do just their armor. So I figured out a way to get there quicker.
Sure.
Nice. Yeah, and you got it. Well, like you said, when I'm only painting for 2 hours a day, sometimes that only equates to an hour and a half or an hour and 20 minutes, because the next stage that I'm getting up to in my painting is going to take a full 2 hours. So I stop and I know when to stop.
Or you have to find your journal for an hour.
Yeah, or you lose your journal. Yeah. I'd love that you got a journal. Can you send me a picture of it? Does it have unicorns on the front and little rose hearts?
It doesn't. I should trick it out a little bit.
You really should. Yeah. Well, it should have Sanguinius's face on it with a love heart.
Oh, you're right. It might by the time you see it. I've I can't show you some pictures of the recipes because I've spelled several things wrong, and then I decided to abbreviate some of the manufacturer names by things that don't make any sense to anybody but me. So
you just want to keep your secrets. You want to keep your secrets. I understand that. It's fine.
Will know how I paint this pink. I'll tell you how. Well, I can tell you how I paint the pink in the finishing moves.
Well, I'm going to... Who's the name of the guy who wanted the everlasting gobstopper in Willy Wonka? Slughorn? I'm going to turn into Slughorn. I'm going to get your magic recipes. Well, it's my life's goal now.
We've kind of rambled on a bit. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Space Wolves. Yeah. And I specifically want to talk about, is it worth maybe shoehorning in some Dark Angels just to get that line in the wool stratagem activated?
It was Slugworth, I think. Not Slughorn. Yeah. Slughorn's off Harry Potter.
That's right. You're right.
I'm distracted. Thank you.
we're going to solve all kind of problems today. Characters in books and movies is one of them. See you guys in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Adam and Red here.
Still Adam.
Still here, Red.
Okay, as promised, we're going to talk a little bit about Dark Angels. In context of the Space Wolves, the Dark Angels in their codex have a stratagem. I think it's called the Lion and the Wolf.
Yeah, and this is a little bit of fluff, but they've managed to insert into the game, which I adore. So there's fluff-wise, there's always been this thing between Dark Angels and Space Wolves, going back to a duel between Russ and the Lion that went on for a month or so, a day or so, which the Lion won, just in case anyone was curious.
I think that's still debated, but yeah, okay.
but you pay 1 CP if you have a Lion character and a Dark Angels character, I think, after they're deployed next to each other.
Oh, so use this stratagem before the battle. If your army includes any Space Wolves infantry units, Choose one Dark Angels infantry model and one Space Wolves infantry model in your army. Roll a dice for each model. On a 4+, that model suffers a mortal wound. Each model that survives then increases its strength, attacks, weapon skill, and leadership characteristics by 1. You could only use this stratagem once per battle. The proximity was from an older edition. I can't remember exactly which edition it was, but you did used to have to put the models next to each other and they rolled to hit each other.
I like this a lot for the current state of the game. And I also like it a lot knowing that both Dark Angels and Space Wolves don't necessarily have game-breaking super doctrine bonuses. Like, they don't have an Iron Hands equivalent super doctrine where they, you know, it's you can build your whole army around it. They're both good and they're both nice to have, but you're not gonna cry if you lose them. You know what I mean?
Well, with the Space Wolves specifically, like, you can replicate that super doctrine bonus through other means. You know,
sure, the litany, yeah,
the litany or the stratagem for their character model.
Yes, yeah, there's ways around it. Like, there's ways to make it work. And that's where I was going. So between this, so we'll talk about the stratagem first in regards that, I mean, think of the characters that you could buff with that stratagem specifically, right? Both of them, you know, we just spent the last time talking about Ragnar specifically, and think of him with more attacks and higher strength and what he's, I mean, we already said he's going to be able to take on a knight pretty much by himself, right?
Well, yeah, and it's a huge deal going to that strength 7 as well, because he's strength 6, so massing strength 7, he becomes so much more relevant against a lot of other vehicles, well, non-knight toughness 8 vehicles. But it's actually a really big deal going up +1 strength. On top of that, it's 1 CP at the start of the game to buff 2 characters. Like, and there's no possibility that they're going to die if they're actual characters, because there's no one wound characters. You can technically do this on a sergeant, because it's any unit, isn't it? It's a model in a unit.
And then it's only 50-50 that they take any damage.
That they take a more... exactly right. So you can do this on all sorts of stuff.
True.
Yeah, I really think it's good.
So that's where, you know, we talk about mixing it, and I'll give credit to, I was recently talking to Eric Aish, who's, you know, I've been talking to about maybe some future prospects with the U.S. Army esports team. He was totally his idea. He came across the table with a Wolf Supreme Command and 2 battalions of Dark Angels under this. And, you know, talking about Ragnar and that Supreme Command, and then in the battalions of Dark Angels, you're talking about Samael with 3 Talons and Black Knights, and then Deathwing Terminator Bomb with Belial. And when you think about what they can all do on the table between what the Deathwing and Ravenwing are capable of, I mean, that's a lot. You can push a lot in someone's face. And that Supreme Command of Space Wolves is going to be a lot hard to stop, right? Because, I mean, the same thing, you know, whether it was Space Wolves or Dark Angels in front of Ragnar, it's still the same concept. You've still got a ton of bodies between you and him until he wants to charge you and he wants to get into the mix of it. And now he's souped up to strength 7 and an additional attack on top of that.
They can then become more attacks. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Every extra attack on his base profile that he gets could technically become 3 extra attacks. Well, 2 extra attacks if you're in a mixed detachment.
Right.
Or a mixed army.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it's got a lot of play. I like the idea of it. This was an idea that I had to use with the Deathwing Knight Champion, because I've always been looking for ways to buff that guy. In a lot of games, like when you're playing against a Horde, every plus attack you can give that guy is essentially another 2 guys that unit can kill. I think it's actually a pretty big deal on him as well. And then if you use that to buff him and then buff Ragnar as well, you're just increasing your blending potential like exponentially.
But is it worth it though? So is it worth sacrificing? I guess what you mentioned that the super doctrines you're nonplussed about them. What else do you put in the army though, other than just these characters?
You could put you could put Blood Angels in here, mate, if you wanted to.
I guess you're right, because then anything, the doors are open, right?
If you're going to open the floodgates, it might as well, you know, crack it all the way open.
But is that the right thing to do? Guard's probably better in that case.
But then you lose all doctrines. I think Space Marine-esque, I think Power Armor need the doctrines. But past the doctrines, I think it's an open slather. I think you could do most of what you want.
Yeah, the doctrines are key. You're right. That's a good idea. I think if you're probably going to run a little lean on points once you start to flesh out at least 2 battalions.
Yeah. Well, so I think both the big deal and the little deal I'm getting from the Space Wars is they don't have a big, like, so when the Grey Knights got their release, everyone was like, okay, Paladins are insane. So the whole army is, how much do we need to make Paladins good? And then what else can we take on top of that? So that's usually like 1 or 2 chaplains. That's Voldus or Drago and a librarian or 2 for Changing Tides and whatnot. I think I don't want to boil down the Space Wolf release to Ragnar, but he's the obvious standout. If you are taking Space Wolves and you are not taking Ragnar, I think you could ask yourself why and why not. Especially, yeah. Well, sorry, I'd say that especially from a competitive standpoint. If you love Logan and you just think that chariot is just the greatest and most clever thing G-Dub's ever done, bully for you. Good for you guys.
I could be wrong, but the Space Wolf players may identify with certain companies, certain great companies.
That's a big deal as well. So there's
that may influence what they take in their army list. But if you're not attached to that, it needs to be Ragnar all day long.
I believe so. I'm of the opinion that, yeah, Ragnar is so incredibly good, just incredibly freaking good, that you would just be like, oh, well, if I'm not taking Ragnar, why not? And if you were taking any Dark Angels, you'd be taking it to use this on Ragnar and a Dark Angels guy. I wish it was non-infantry. I wish I could use this on Samael, because if I use this on Samael and Ragnar, oh my god, that would be incredibly good.
Right.
But does Ragnar? I mean, yeah, that would be my like question perfect. Is, does Ragnar even need it? Is it just overkill on Ragnar? Is this better off on, I mean, Harald Deathwolf? I mean, I'm not being serious about that, but is it better off on Arjak?
Well, and I think it goes back to what you said, Adam. Strength 6, strength 7, right? Like, strength 7 puts him in the realm of taking on vehicles on fours regularly.
So I think the way you have to look at this is so you do this pre-game. You don't do this in list creation, which I think is a big strength of it.
Yeah, before the battle, if your army includes so on and so forth. Yeah.
So I think you just try and have at least two or three different options for it. If you're like, oh, if strength 7 is the big deal, if strength 7 is going to put Ragnar over the top and make him just go god mode, then you absolutely do it. If you're better off just rounding out your force and buffing another character, let's say you've just got a Wolfguard Battle Eater with a Jump Pack and Thunderhammer and such, maybe you just do it there, and then he's getting closer to an equivalent of a Blood Angel Smash Captain instead of being almost as good. And then, yeah, you have like one or two options with your Dark Angels as well. So you can have someone like Azrael, if you got Azrael. I don't think you would take Azrael in this kind of setup, but you have something like you have a Smash character as well. You have a Master with Jump Pack. And then you also have a, let's say you have a small unit of Black Knights or Deathwing Terminators that you can use it on. I think on both of those terms, it's good because of the flexibility, because you're not locked into, oh, you must use it on blah, 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 blah. You can use it. You don't even need to use it. Don't even use it at the start of the game. Oh, cool. I don't even need it. Stuff it.
Yeah,
there are lots of different ways. There are lots of good ways for Dark Angels and Space Wolves to complement each other as well. Which I find kind of hilarious. I've had some jokes with Mitch Pelham about it, saying that they really kind of meant to go together in a lot of respects. Whereas like the reliable shooting is something that while Space Wolves have, they certainly don't have in quantities that makes you really, really fearsome. Whereas Dark Angels do. Like the Talon Masters bring a lot to the table for Space Wolves. Whereas Space Wolves, you can have these meat shields, and I think transhuman physiology is something that has made, I'm not sure if it's made Wolfen top tier, but it's made them reasonable and it's made them worth considering, especially if, Lord forbid, something happens and they get a points reduction. But I think there's meat on the bone when you put those two together. And I think if you look at this stratagem as just the cherry on top to an already good combo, I think there's a lot of opportunity.
I agree wholeheartedly.
That's fair enough. I just do think that it's better off on another character that you may have, you know, one of the relic weapons or something on that increases its strength. I mean, like there's something, you know, it's an interesting relic. I don't know that you're taking it for this, but let's say you can get away with the Companion's Blade, which is melee plus 2 strength, neg 3 AP, 2 damage, that if the bearer's within 3 inches of another Space Wolf character, you get to reroll the wounds. Not reroll once, but reroll the whole wounds. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that would make you strength 7 on that guy. 2 damage apiece.
It's legit. I'm not sure if it's a game break. I'm not sure if it's just better, if you're just better doing it on a...
Well, you're talking about the situational. So this is something, you know, you opt for that second relic or whatever, maybe, or this becomes your relic if you're fighting something where strength 7 is critical.
Absolutely.
It replaces a power sword, so it's not like you're heavily invested in that otherwise.
Yeah, it's 4 points. Who cares?
Man, that's
4 points for a good buy.
It's 4 points is 4 points, but when you look at things like the, you know, that's why I was so high up on the like the Burning Blade and stuff, because it replaces a 4 point thing, and it's just,
well, you've got the Heavenfall really Blade for Dark Angels as well, and that is, I think that's plus 2 strength minus 3 d3 damage, and it's plus 1 attack, so you're just all of a sudden you're giving plus 3 strength plus 2 attacks, and that is another one that's going from strength 6 to strength 7.
Yeah, it adds up.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things we didn't talk about on the last show, and this, I would put this on the FAQ watch maybe, is that there's a relic in here called Morkai's Teeth Bolts.
Yeah.
When you give a model this relic, select one bolt weapon that model is armed with. When that model is chosen to shoot with, you can choose for that weapon to fire a Morkai's Teeth bolt. If you do, you can only make one attack with that weapon, but if a hit is scored, the target unit suffers one mortal wound, and that unit is marked by Morkai until the end of the turn. When resolving an attack against a unit that is marked by Morkai, re-roll a wound roll of one.
So your whole army will get a lieutenant bonus against whatever you mark. That's...
Yeah, and it's not limited to space wolves as it is written right now.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing that I'm not sure people notice about a lot of these. The Blood Angels one is probably the best one in the game so far, and because it's not limited to Blood Angels. You just shoot something, and I think you just get +1 to hit against it for everybody else.
Yeah, this one, same vein.
This one looks to be quite comparable. So I'm a big fan of these being useful. I know the Dark Angels one is pretty trash, and I know I'm expecting many of the other ones to be pretty trash, but they act a little bit of utility.
Right? Like the Ultramarines, I think, is really good. That's the one that's like extra one damage or something, isn't it? Can't remember.
I actually have no idea. That would tell you how much interest I've had in it, because I actually have no idea.
Because Ultramarines got sidelined with the quickness when Iron Hands and Raider Guard came out. But I think the Ultramarine special ammunition is pretty good, but the rest of them have been kind of mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also, they're flavor things. So, every relic doesn't have to be game-breaking.
Yeah, none of these relics seem to be anything you build your army around. They're just little stuff you can drop in when you need it.
You know, Talisman of the Storm, though, kind of a fan of that one.
Yeah, it seems like there's a bit of a psychic phase going for the Space Wolves. They can do quite a bit with like the Living Lightning and Najal actually being quite... Najal's actually just quite good.
+1 to cast with Najal, is that right? Or is it,
yeah.
So with the, they have that stratagem that if there are three Rune Priests near each other, then the Living Lightning does D6 damage. And that is, that as explosive as that is, it is practically seen zero.
Well, it's just very expensive. Like having three Rune Priests is a big investment.
Yeah.
Like to make that happen, it was a big investment. And especially when they only had, like, apart from Living Lightning, they had like one or two good psychic powers. So you're taking, because librarians can cast two powers each. So that third librarian you're taking has nothing good to cast. And I think that was the issue. Because you could always get the plus cover spell, the -1 to hit spell, and then a smite or two, or a Living Lightning and a smite. But then, yeah, that third one you buy, he's just kind of, I don't want to say pissing in the wind, but he's not doing a lot. He's not adding a lot to the overall synergy of your army past his stratagem.
You're not wrong, but now we've got the Vanguard Primaris Space Marines in the mix, like officially, and so the Phobos Librarian counts. He's a Rune Priest.
Awesome. That's actually really good.
You know, I don't know that's, you're still too far off the mark. There's a couple of the Obscurus Discipline things that are good, but they only affect the Phobos units, and so if you're not building your army around that, then you're back to exactly what you're talking about, so you've got to kind of play into it, of course. But the Talisman and the Storm is Rune Priest only after resolving the first psychic power or the bearer in your psychic phase, roll 1d6. For each enemy unit within 12 inches of the bearer, on a 4+, that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound. That is a 24-inch bubble.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's on a 4+, every enemy unit, potentially, within 12 inches of the psyker, takes them one mortal wound.
12 inches can be a big bubble from a 32 mil base, if positioned right. And if you add a couple of smites in on top of that, like, you can chip away at a lot of different units.
I don't remember. Is the Primaris Librarian on a 40 mil base?
I actually have no idea.
I can't remember if he is or not.
I would not be surprised if he is, though.
So you fling these guys up in the Impulsor, because Ragnar has to keep up with the Wolfen or whatever that you're running forward, or if you have any other, like you see, you're using the Phobos units. Get out, cast the Psyche Power. You could be up in the grill of the enemy and potentially affect most of their units.
Mm. Is anybody else getting the impression that Impulsors just seem to be the best Space Wolves build?
I think so, yes. But I've also think that Impulsor is the best Marine build.
That's totally fair. Yeah. I don't want to say they're obnoxiously good, because I'm not sure they're on par with like their Repulsor Executioners or anything like that, but they are good for the cost.
Yeah, point for point. That's what it is. Just point for point, and their utility, like they get that, -2, they've got a wide range of weapon options that don't break the bank on the points.
Mm.
And you get to do some degenerate things with them, like wall off areas to charge, because if they have to come into contact with that, they're -2, and
yep.
Sometimes that's a big deal, and they get to benefit from the first two doctrines in the game, because they can have heavy weapons and assault weapons, and they're really hard to kill.
That's relevant.
So
yep.
for, what is it, 150?
No, I can't disagree. Like
well, it, what I'm saying is you throw this librarian up, and he can get really far. And if he's supporting Ragnar, which Ragnar, you know, that's he's a support character with a heck of a punch.
Yeah, well, he has the ability to, depending on how hard you want to make him hit, he can kill just about anything.
Yeah, mostly you have him out there kind of, and I think, Red, you may have mentioned this earlier, but it's, they've got to grind, you could effectively put it to where they have to grind through all these bodies to get to him. And then when they get to him, he's gonna finish whatever you want. You're like, he'll help win the war of attrition because this dude is 120 points, and so you've spent practically nothing on him, and he can kill everything in the game.
Right.
Is it worth it? People have to overcommit to try to get in this, digging this guy out, and that's going to be, that's really going to play to his advantage. And then if you've got this librarian that is every round pumping out, I mean, conservatively two or three extra mortal wounds a turn.
I find with characters of his ilk, especially characters of his ilk that can't be double moved or can't be slingshotted and things like this, it's the threat that they pose as much as anything else that really causes people damage. So I think a good example of this is like Abaddon. Abaddon gets to, I'm not saying you see Abaddon on top tables all that often, but Abaddon, just by dint of his existence, makes you play the game differently. The same can be said for Smash Captains, but mind you, Smash Captains just seem to be not relegated to the throw them away as soon as possible and take as many dudes with you, but they do get the most return the earlier you use them in a game, from what I can tell.
Yep.
Because they don't do a lot when they just stand in there at the back of the back.
No,
back
you
of the
want
field,
them swinging every like, single turn. You want to be making your opponent react to them. Every single turn.
Yeah, you want to go in and you want to get a big favorable trade. Yeah. Whereas Abaddon, if he trades on turn six or turns like on turn five or turn six, that's probably everything he needed to do because he stood around being a huge deterrent. Same as Gilliman, being a huge deterrent, but also being a huge force multiplier. Ragnar can do both. You can throw him away turn one for a massive trade. Or you can sit on him and just make people have to play around him because he's got essentially an 18-inch threat range. Although they can get a couple of pluses to cast now, can't they? Pluses to charge. Apologies, not pluses to cast.
Plus, yeah, through the chaplain for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, so he's essentially he'll have
priest,
a
through the wolf priest.
A wolf, yes, a wolf priest. And their casters are definitely not casters. They don't use psychic powers. That's for those lesser.
Never
beings,
heard of the
warp. Those thousand sons. Yeah, yeah, never heard of the warp. Never heard of it. Never seen it. Sorry, mate. See ya. So many people can't get past that fact with the wolves. They're like, but they're hypocrites. But it's where the magic guides. It's not real magic. It's hilarious.
I believe them.
I like that. But from a fluff point of view, I love that because it adds a hell of a lot of depth to the characters in Space Wars. They're like, hey, are we contradictory? Are we just full of it? Because on one hand, we sanction Magnus for all this awful stuff that he did. On the other hand, we're like, oh, I'm going to make all my impulses -2 to hit through psychic power and auto launches. But that's okay because the Emperor said it was fine. In fact, the Emperor doesn't even know. He doesn't know. Let's not tell him.
Yes, they do get pluses to charge.
That was a good segue.
That was it. Oh, well, we didn't cover this on the last show, but Hunters Unleashed now doesn't have the bikers, dreadnoughts, and inventory restriction anymore.
Yay. They're like real boys now.
Yeah, it was so the plus one to hit makes impulsors even better. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, good pick.
Now
they can hit on fives in combat.
Yeah.
They can hit on fives. Watch out, guys. They're coming for you.
But they explode on sixes. So by that time, if they've actually gotten into you, you're just, it's a value unit is where I'm going. It's value.
Here's a question for you. If Space Wolves attacks exploded on a non-unmodified, if it was on a 6+, so the first turn of combat, they're always exploding on a 5 in Assault Doctrine, would that have made them as powerful as some of the most powerful ones we've seen?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about it, though. I think they get enough. I mean, I shouldn't say enough, and I'm not trying to limit their potential anyway, but I think that stuff is just kind of gravy. Like, even with the Blood Angels, like, I don't bank on the fact that we're ever going to get there. Like, by the time we've gotten to turn three, if I'm relying on that to be what wins the game for me, then I've probably already lost anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it is nice. And I mean, it's themey and I appreciate it. I'm glad that it's there, but that's not why you're playing the army. You're not like hoping that I guess you are in theory, but. You're not biding your time until turn three. You are working the entire time.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing. Combat armies don't have the luxury. Combat-oriented, they don't have the luxury of saying, oh, I'm just going to sit in my deployment zone, and then turn three, I'm going to get you. It's like, if I haven't got you by turn three, I'm so dead.
Yeah, you need to have everything set up that way and all the screens gone, and you got to be ahead on points. The same struggles that any army would have. You can't just be twiddling your thumbs. Yeah, so I mean, it's just gravy when it gets to that. I look at it as more of same thing. It's like you're just making up for models lost.
Mm.
It's as if you had a couple more models.
I actually really liked that analogy because it's very true. Yeah, don't look at it as the in itself is a thing to work for. Just look at it as a cherry on top of the stuff you already have.
Yeah, and then don't forget that it's there when you make it to turn three and you've done all this work, and then it's just like, ha-ha! I've got it. But so, I mean, the Space Wolves, you are right. This release is kind of centered around Ragnar being, because he's so going to overshadow anything else that you do. But, I mean, good news is, though, you can legitimately build around this dude.
He's legitimately worth building around.
Yeah. So everything is better around him. And that includes all this other stuff so you can do your tricks. And I do think there's a lot of play in the Rune Priest.
I think so too. You can still make that crazy Rune Priest that gets like 40 attacks, can't you?
You're talking about the Rune Priest. I think that's a space
jump pack.
Right?
And not a Space Wolf Rune Priest. You get him, he casts his two dogs that pop out as well. And then his two dogs both have like three attacks each. And so on the charge, he'll get to 11 attacks, attacks twice to 22. And then there was some other way. Never mind. Maybe it's only 22 attacks.
I get you. Yeah, I wouldn't think
22, 40. I mean, that's still a lot of attacks coming out of one model.
It's pretty comparable. I mean,
it might as well be at some point.
Well, you just think about how much the Lion and the Wolf exponentially brings up that guy's damage output, because that's not one more attack. It's automatically two more attacks because you're basing this around always fighting twice with this guy. And the plus strength, taking him on his staff or his whatever he's got, what would it be? It'd be strength six, the staff tough two. So yeah, he would go to strength seven as well. So he's another strength seven character with a bucket of attacks.
But the Space Wolves, one of the things, you know, we talk about there, it's hard to fit this all in. You know, they've always been known for their large amount of characters. And so building
your
list, it's not cheesy. It's not like that's kind of what I think what you're supposed to do. Like have a bunch of bolters, even intercessors or whoever. And then a bunch of characters. I mean, I think the Wolfen are still a little point heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. They are overcosted. The addition of Transhuman now has been a big deal for them. Transhuman makes them pretty tasty again. I'm not sure if it makes them competitive tasty, but at least puts some sauce on that dry, dry biscuit.
Well, it
well, we go back to blending the Space Wolves with other units, right? And I totally think there's something to it with Wolfen and Ragnar, and how you want to deliver them is one thing, right? I mean, I used to see all kinds of ways of getting them off the field, but now, you know, I mean, it's not like you can put them in impulsors, right? And so there's got to be some give and take to it. But I do think that you could see a detachment with Ragnar and Wolfen. I do think that that's possible.
I think if you're going to bring
Wolfen, agree.
You need a distraction. So you need things that are already up in their face. And stuff like the incursors.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were about to say Sanguinary Guard and segue us again. But
see, you just on Wings of Fire some Sanguinary Guard in, and nobody's looking to rip it anymore. Which is true, but that's not where I was going. but you can put these forward deploying units, the concealed position units. So and that's where a Phobos Rune Priest and some incursors or inceptors can pay off. Not inceptors.
Yeah, that's
infiltrators.
Yeah, infiltrators. Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, because if they ignore them, now look, the truth is they might have enough oomph to get through them anyway. There are two wound models, but you know, you can certainly likely get them in the cover and then do some of these other tricks. And so depending on, you know, the who goes first in the state of the game, you might be able to make them kind of survivable. And so people might not have enough gas to get back to your Wolfen. And by the time, because the Wolfen can advance and charge. So they move seven, they can advance and they can charge after they advance. So they're faster than you might expect.
Yeah, they are. And so now what I think the best use for them is the 7-inch charge off an outflank. Now, the positioning is a bit awkward because you need to get a chaplain or whatever, a rune priest in range to give them the plus two off the outflank. But I still feel like having them on the board is just kind of painting a big target. Like it's painting a Thunderfire cannon me now, please. Like it's just on their heads. So I feel like having them off the board, but there's just a few bits and pieces you got to do to make that work. And I feel like you're still at the whims of a good player being able to stop you. What I do like is anything that can get transhumaned and have a 3+ invulnerable save. Having used Deathwing Terminators, so Deathwing Knights quite a bit now, transhumaning those guys and then having a 3+ invulnerable save to go through as well. Is phenomenally disheartening when you just roll slightly above average and you, yeah, Like, a whole game plan just goes down the gurgler when you're like, ah, you thought you were going to kill 6 out of the 8 of these guys? Ah, you killed 4. And 4 is all I need to double attack through, like, the rest of your army.
If you are going first, you do need long range to get to these guys. They can close that gap. You need enough effective long range firepower to do enough damage to them, and then they can close the gap. I mean, with things like you're talking about the Wolf Priest, you know, with the fact that they get the litanies now that gives the +2 to charge, and they've got all this additional movement in the consolidation and pylon phases, and being able to advance. And this is why you need Ragnar and the Impulsor, by the way, because they're gonna advance. So they're moving up an average 11 inches.
Yep.
And then being able to charge from that. And so, you want to string back as few models as possible because you want to get as many attacks you can in close combat. You don't want them a lot of standing around or just being, you know, placeholders, wound carriers. You know, you don't want that happening. You want to get as much as possible. So you got to put Ragnar really far up there to get that reroll to charge. And then you get the +2 on top of that. They are a big target, but how many guns are they going to have that they can put on those if you also have another forward threat in the form of some of these forward deploying Primaris Marines?
Yeah, that's really relevant. If you just do your due diligence, I guess, and make sure you got a well-balanced force, you should have enough to make any kind of... Well, that's the thing about well-balanced and all comers. You should have enough to make sure your tricks are getting off reliably. So yeah, look, I'd love to see Wolfen on the table again. Especially, I like them in the Centurion meta, because Centurions can't charge them. They can't go in there and trade, because the Centurions just die, because they'll go in there, they'll kill 3 or 4 Wolfen, those 3 or 4 Wolfen attack when they die, and they just kill all the Centurions. So I hope they become a little bit of a balancer, a little bit of a balanced, check and balance to some of the still erroneous bits and pieces out there. Yeah, we'll see how we go.
Well, I mean, the infiltrators, you know, those are the ones that help you back up people from deploying on you, right? Yeah. Reserves can't be set up, or reinforcements can't be set up within 12 inches of those guys.
Yep.
I think that, you know, determining the momentum and the way the game works is, you know, that might be the trick for Space Wolves.
It definitely helps. I think what infiltrators do for Space Marines at large is, with helping with border control, is just such a big deal. I mean, I'm a big fan, honestly, of that 12-inch radius that they put off and allowing you to kind of control what goes where to a certain extent. You're right. Like, being able to control that border control, it allows the Space Wolves to... Hopefully, it goes back to what you were saying last time, Adam, in regards of the terms and conditions. The infiltrators definitely provide a degree of security to help ensure that you can make those terms and conditions occur a little more readily.
With these guys, you corral your opponent into one or two spots on the table. That means you know exactly where you have to go with your heavy-hitting units. Yeah, I don't mind it. All right, so let me tell you quickly my pink recipe.
Let's hear it.
Pink is an intimidating color. I mean, it's a pastel. You know, there's a lot of ways to do it incorrectly. And almost all my attempts in the past have been a little too translucent. I haven't really gotten an effect that I wanted from it.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I've tried to paint Emperor's Children, and it just never really worked out the way that I want. Now, look, I know there's tons of recipes out there, and that's what I do. I go and find the recipes that I think work for me. And what worked this time was a blend of using the regular layer paints, and then I did a recess wash, not even a wash, but a recess shade using the contrast paints.
Mm.
So I put down a coat of Demonette Hide, which is like a gray color, gray purplish.
Mm-hmm.
And then went in just with Emperor's Children Pink. Now, the Emperor's Children Pink took probably 2 thin coats, doing the Duncan style with that. But then after I got the pink to just it was just 2 quick thin coats on, you know, these are on small armor panels with my Goliath gangs. And then I went in with a real thin Vulpus Pink contrast recess wash, where that's where you just paint the wash. Thinned it down a little bit with water, didn't even use the contrast medium, right in the crevices of the armor.
This kind of pink that you're trying to achieve, was you're trying not to get it, like you said, translucent. You don't want that white kind of peeking through, but at the same time, you're not going for like vibrant bubblegum pink here,
no,
right?
It is not a hot pink. This is more on the, like, what you might, in your mind's eye, think a pink horror is supposed to look like.
Okay.
So I got that effect, which I painted pink horrors with thinned down Vulpus Pink. I mean, that's the contrast paint for me that worked exactly like it was supposed to. But I diluted it just enough to get me that consistency to flow really well into the crevice. And it worked almost as like the perfect shade. And I didn't put it all over the flat surface, so I didn't get any of that kind of muddy blend of the colors. A Demonette Hide and then the Emperor's Children Pink really worked for me as far as a base coat, a layer paint, and then the Vulpus Pink worked as a wash. I know people have used that or used the contrast in that capacity before, but I mean, this was the best pink I've ever painted, and I'm actually happy with the results.
Well, that's awesome, man. I'm sitting here. I just picked up a model of mine where I tried to achieve something of a pink. I wasn't going for too. I was just going for almost like a fleshy kind of pink, you know? I was not. I will admit upright that I likely failed in that regard, but it's tough. Those pastels can be tough to achieve in certain regards.
So. It really is. It's tough. I mean, you hear yellow's difficult to work with. There, like, I think we all have this like nemesis technique or paint color for us. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination good at yellow, but I also haven't attempted yellow a lot. I've gotten to where, like on my Blood Angel helmets, I actually use a yellow wash, like a primate white, wash it with yellow, and then I shade the recess of the shades, but I've never ever had a pink that I'm really happy with, and I do now, and I'm going to try it on, you know, now that I found my recipe book, I'm going to try it on another couple of models and hopefully try to replicate that success.
No, and I think that's that replication process, right? For some people, they don't necessarily, they don't have the experience of having to come back to something like that. And so it can make it difficult when you're trying to mass produce to whatever extent and you come up with the right technique. But if you aren't recording it or you're not, you know, you don't have any way of coming back to it, that can definitely make it difficult to continue to mass produce something down the road. You know, you'd hate to do part of an army and then get sidetracked with something else and then come back and not be able to recreate the color scheme you had.
That's why you have this journal, so you can come back. Let's say you paint something, you know, five figures for a buddy. Then that buddy comes back to you and says, I'd like five more figures, and you have no idea what you did.
Yep.
Same with you. You paint an army, then you go play something else for 6 months.
Yep.
And come back like, what color did I use for these eye lenses? You know.
Oh yeah. I admit I have a container of spray can lids that I have kept. If they didn't have the color written on them at one point, I've written the color on them. So I go back to, if I'm trying to remember what I used, you know, you talked earlier about your preference one way or the other of using spray cans to prime. And I admit, you know, with some of the degrees, I mean, you've seen, you know, I think at the Louisville Slugger, you saw my Necron army. I slapped some bone colored primer on there and went to work because I had 100 Necron warriors I was painting at the time. So it's definitely how I went about that, because I got that bone color on there. But I would hate to have not kept track of that. And if I had to, because later I went back and I was painting Immortals and I needed to be able to recreate that. And fortunately, I had my little system, not probably as organized as your recipe book there, but I could pull up the paint lid and I could see exactly which color I had used to do that, so I could go back to it.
Man, whatever it takes.
That's right.
Well, guys, thanks for joining me tonight. This is a jam-packed release for Space Wolves and Orcs. You know, we'll talk more about army list and stuff in future episodes, but I think that the Space Wolves at least got something they can sink their teeth into, and that was an intentional pun. I'm going to own it. You know, I'm enjoying at least the theory for list crafting.
Man, and it's going to be so exciting, especially given current circumstances and everything, when people start bringing back to the table. I mean, there's a lot for people to build into. And I think people are going to come out of their shells with some really good ideas to throw down on the table. I look forward to seeing it play out.
Some actual secret brewing can be happening right now.
That's right. That's right.
Man, well, have a good rest of your night. We will talk next week.
You too, Paul. Thanks.
Make my day.